I've been talking with Hal Blackwell, who's been giving us the insider's look at how things really work within the walls of a brokerage firm. And previous to the break, we were talking about conflicts of interest that evolve when brokerages are managing money or parsing money out to other firms to be managed. Hal, what I wanted to ask you is that if you have an account that's a so-called managed account where the brokerage firm is parsing the money out to some investment manager and then just charging, let's say, a 1 or 2% fee to the client, what happens when the broker advisor, who's the liaison between the client and the brokerage firm, what happens when the broker advisor starts to have a dim view of the capital markets and wants to maybe pull out and go to cash or reduce exposure? Talk about some of the conflicts that kind of bubble to the surface then.
Well, that is the primary reason that I've written the book. In 08, August of September of 08, I came to the conclusion that there was a real problem in the markets. And when I thought about going to cash, I knew that that was going to cut my commissions drastically. I personally had my money in cash, but yet my clients were still invested, and I was encouraged to not change that.
So how do they encourage you? Is it through a wink or?
Well, it's your production credit report at the end of each month.
Oh, okay. So I forgot. So we're going to go back to the point that you're a producer, and that's the encouragement.
That's correct. And there's no other measure of success or, you know, how well you're doing your job.
Right.
It comes down to how much money are you earning for the firm.
That's right. Okay.
Okay. And when I looked around the office, and I knew the other advisors were in cash, and yet when I heard them on the phone encouraging their clients to stay invested, I had trouble sleeping at night. Finally, on September the 23rd of 2008, I decided that I could no longer sleep, and I went to my larger clients and said, we need to go to cash. And when I did that, I just washed away a large portion of my income. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point that I knew that there was a huge conflict of interest here mm-hmm. that was not being disclosed.
That's right. That's right. when those structures are set up to take that 2%, let's say, and divide it between the money manager, the wirehouse itself, we'll just call it the house, and the advisor, what is a range of splits? I mean, who ends up with most of that money?
Well, the experienced advisors get 50% of the money that comes into the firm.
At least at one firm we know of, right?
Yeah, at one firm. Well, okay. I mean, this you can go and look on the web and you can see exactly how much these guys are paid on managed money. Actually, at the present.
So they publish it.
Yeah, you got to know where to look.
Okay,
I mean,
right.
You come to the presentation, I'm going to give you a copy.
Okay.
Okay, of what each firm charges for these different managed money accounts. And see, there's a different charge for stocks. There's a different charge for bonds. And there's no charge for money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cash.
Cash.
Yeah, money market accounts and so on.
Right. So.
Okay. So what about the division? I mean, what does the house make? So a good producing broker might make half. How about some guy who's not producing as much?
Well, that is a number that's in flux. When I was in the industry, at the firm I worked at, it was around 38%.
Okay.
And I know that it's lower now, and they're doing some different things to try to get lower producing producers out of the business.
What do you have to hit in terms of, is it revenues? Revenues for the firm? Is that how it's benchmarked?
Yeah, well, yeah.
What's good for a broker? Is it, $1 million in revenues, or is it $500,000?
$1 million is the gold standard. I mean, if you're a $1 million producer, if you're bringing $1 million into the firm, you get expense money to entertain clients.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of perks that go along with being a $1 million producer.
What if you produce $250,000? Now, we're not talking about how many assets or how much in assets is flowing in the doors. We're talking about the fees that are generated from those assets. So if you're producing $1 million, that's probably, what, $50 million in managed assets, or $75 million, or
well, the something firm like would view that as how talented that producer is.
How to deploy it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they call that velocity.
Oh, okay.
So if you can create a velocity of 2% on $50 million, then yeah, there you're at $1 million. But if you have $100 million, then you only have to do a velocity of 1%. So there's a...
So if you have $100 million, you could ostensibly be nicer to your clients and still get the jet ride or whatever they
call
it.
How about that?
Okay.
Yeah, how about that?
All right. In your book, you talk about the real clients not being the end consumer, the guy with his 401k or IRA or whatever, that the real client is the advisor. Could you just amplify on that a little bit?
Well, you know, advisors make money in two ways, and that's through fees and commissions. And the other way they make money is by changing firms. Right now, since they're having such trouble growing organically, these wirehouses will pay a producer three times his annual revenue to come to their firm. Mm-hmm. So the way the firms jostle for these high income producers, it really makes the advisor the real client of these wirehouses. It's not the guy who's walking in to open up an account.
How do they pay that? Pay three times, then it would seem that they would have to trap the advisor in the firm.
Well,
do. You can't let them out then, right? Because they've paid that up front. They've got to get it back somehow, right?
Right. And they make it in the form of a loan, and then there's all kind of different...
Oh, a loan. Okay.
Yeah, and a loan.
Kind of the way they do for partners, but it's a little different, right?
A little different, and they have an agreement where you can't leave for 7 or 5 years or whatever the arrangement is.
So that's a contract that you'd sign?
Yes.
Okay. So then once you get that bonus money, then you have an incentive to work the money harder so that that money generates the higher fees.
You had better. And because what happens is, and people who get a letter in the mail saying that they have a new broker don't understand that there is a huge war going on behind the scenes to get those folks to change and go with the advisor.
How many clients would a broker typically have?
Oh, wow. It depends how long they've been in the business. I've seen up to 850. I've seen as many as 100.
And you wouldn't have any idea who some of those are, I would think, right?
Not unless you ask or come to the presentation on April the 6th.
Right. Okay. One quick question. You got 10 seconds. How long does it take to get a broker's license?
6 months.
6 months. Okay. Go to the seminar on April 6th. See Hal disclose the inside secrets of the brokerage industry. My name is Glenn Wessel. This is Investor IQ. We've been talking with Hal Blackwell. We'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us.